There we are. Okay, now we're recording two different places. The cell phone, which is pretty much an awesome recorder, so when we want to boot up MP3 files to the internet, this is going to be good. So we're at the Portland Library. This is Reed Keeling, class for February. Okay, but the other one, which is the recording for the on the actual laptop itself, is kind of hit or miss. We'll see what happens. And do you know what happened? Well, say hello. You're here.
Hello, I'm here. I'm John.
Hello.
Okay, that means there's three of us, so that's cool. And who knows what's going to happen before.
I didn't have a chance to say I'm here.
Well, you know, for the interested students, there's follow-up, isn't there? And by the way,
take your word that there are three here.
Yeah. It is a free-for-all, and as I always mention, it is... Well, and this is what happens when we're radio. We really don't know what's going on at all. We just kind of assume that there's a thread of sound, and it makes sense, and that's all we have.
Because you could be the only one here, and you're just changing your voice.
And I say that I'm in Portland, but I could be on the Bahamas, honestly. You know, it really is something like that. It's the beauty of being a human being in this world, really not knowing what's going on if we don't use all our senses. But, you know, sometimes there's a thing called trust, which is hopefully what we start with. And there was a song that I just sang for the people who record on this thing they didn't hear that I sang, Let There Be Peace on Earth and Let It Begin With Me. But the other recording did hear, so that's kind of odd how that is. Not to be overwhelmed or verklempt, but we're just going to make it move forward. So why do the reskilling and reusing? It's ridiculously easy, which is, well, everybody has their own set of conclusions about why they do things and what deeper rationale there is. But there was this thing called the Portland Anchor, and Nate Peterson, wrote an article in it called What Have You Been Inhaling? In which I did talk about runaway ice melt in the poles. And when that happens, we really kind of are going to be losing our internationalism quite a bit, so we have to probably be a little bit more functional in a local level. And that being the case, how fun is that? We'll just kind of experiment to see what happens, because it's probably what humans have been doing for the last umpteen years anyway, and might as well kind of get back to it, because our grandmas and grandpas used to do that too, and let's just explore it. I don't know, that's my perspective. Does anybody have anything else to say they want for a rationale why we'd want to have a reskilling reusing class? Okay, not finding anyone? We'll go right ahead and move on, because I like to move on. Okay, so one thing I did was I had this thing called a life. Like all last month I've been just putting down things in my notes. And then I plop them all onto one piece of paper at the end of the month. And then I say, well, that's the agenda for the reskilling, reusing class, and that's just a ridiculous way to do it. However, there is this adage which is called the show must go on. And so I go ahead and I say the show must go on. So I have a lot of different things that I can go over, but also I've got other passionate people in the room that may want to either just learn, suck it in like a vacuum cleaner, or admonish, saying, oh, we got to fix this, or oh, here's something I learned, that's perfectly fine too. But one thing that happened, just to kind of get us excited about the possibility of how to re-skill, is to take back our ability to have signages on our being and in our realm. Okay, so one thing I brought from home was, I went to this thing and there was a sticker. And there was this sticker that said, you know, Kumbaya or something or other. Oh, yeah, it said Kentucky Waterways Alliance, and there it is, so I could put it on my anything or whatnot. And there's all these things. So how would I, if I wanted to, wanted to acknowledge that I'm excited about Kentucky Waterways Alliance, but I didn't have that bumper sticker, how would I do that? I don't know. I'd find a piece of cardboard and some paint or something and write it on it. Is that what to do? I don't really know. So number one, is it a thing to go ahead and say, hey, I want to make a sign? And number two, how do you do that locally how do you empower oneself? And I don't have an answer for that, but I do have an interesting aspect, which I was just at the police auxiliary meeting a couple of days ago. And in the police auxiliary meeting, there was someone who said, you know what we need to do is we need to harden targets. You know, make sure that your purse is not showing in your car, that your car is not running, that your windows are not down. I mean, these are basic things, but when you have some of those good, you know, what I call, you know, safety hygiene, that's called, you know, hardened target. And I just thought, well, gosh, we need to just get one of those buttons, you know, buttons that have a little pin on them and you can put it on your shirt. And then it says, I am a hardened target. Mm-hmm. I just think that would be so cool. And there is these things called button makers, and they do have one here at the library that if you have a program, you can use their button maker. But if it is just like me who wants to make a sign that says, a button that says, I am a hardened target, you can't be done. So one would have to buy your own button maker, or use someone who's got a button maker by going on Facebook or something like that, saying, anybody got a button maker around here? And then you buy the raw materials, and then you just kind of somehow put it on there, and boom, there you go. And then what happens is you have the ability then to make yourself heard, in spite of the fact that you didn't have to go all the way to China to make some cute little label and all that kind of stuff. Does anyone have any feelings or thoughts or reactions to anything I just said? You can speak, because I have to take my jacket off because I'm really hot.
Well, it's a good way to convey a message, or maybe get a conversation started, or get an easy idea in someone's head by conveying your message with a button.
But if you have to go through metal detector, you have to take them off, because I forgot to take my I Love the Portland Library button off, and I got stuck, and that's a, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there's always some necessary features.
Yeah.
Right. Well, there's always the idea that you could just get some yarn and knit yourself an armband, and then it could be like, I don't know, blue armband or red armband or something like that. Something these days, our armbands are starting to come back now a little bit. I think there was one that was used in Washington, D.C. for some reason, for some event. I have no idea, but just that the idea that, you know, people are not just walking blobs of biology, but we have real thoughts and feelings, and if now's the time to kind of express them, well then, gosh darn, we can certainly do that.
I think a button is better than a tattoo on your head saying whatever the logo.
Well, there are some very interesting people who have a Sharpie marker, and then they put that on their skin, which has a lot of chemicals, and it would go into your skin and have to be decomposed by your liver, but the fact is that you can probably make a temporary tattoo on your body, and I think I've seen kids do that because they, I don't know, they're bored, they have nothing else to do, I don't know, but they make...
Maybe they don't have a button maker.
If they had a button maker or other crappy things that they can make a statement, then they wouldn't have to, like, put their body through the ringers of having all these solvents that are going through their skin.
That's a good idea.
Yes. And there's also hennas and all that kind of stuff too, but at the end of the day, that was just kind of a fun thing that I appreciated. Now, the police auxiliary did not seem to be interested in this idea. So,
the button making?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a hardened target. They just, you know, just didn't seem to be. So it's something that either is going to have to be worked on, or is going to have to just be dropped. And that's part of the skill of being a human being, to know when to, you know, do it, or push harder, or just ignore and go on to something else.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Kentucky Waterways Alliance, can you make a button for them, or do you need to get in touch with them and ask them if you can make a button?
Well,
you can't just take this and make a button.
No, there's a whole technology of button making, and I don't really know that I am smart enough to go into it. The logo you're talking about?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
You mean their intellectual property?
Yeah. This is theirs.
Well, one can only just say that you can pull out a sticker and you can say, oh, wouldn't it be fun to use that for an idea? But you can generate your own logo, you can generate your own wordage, and I think that's probably appropriate. You can put it on a piece of paper, and then you put it on top of something, and then it ends up being in the sticker or the
post. Gave me a really good idea for the Portland Triangle.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So you have an idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it. And sounds like you're gonna generate some more ideas in your head before you're ready to just spill the beans on your idea. Is that right?
The Portland Triangle is gonna get some buttons for me.
Okay, well, that's what we do, is just, we just kind of run with stuff as we find them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, all right. So this is fine. Now, like I said, there is just no way we can predict what's going to happen next with this. And that is one thing that has to do with skilling is food. And you can have food where there is dried rice that is very tough. And one thing you can do is instead of just watering down rice and then it turns to sog and then you don't have a problem with hard rice anymore, but you can put it into a Ziploc bag or any sort of bag and just crush it with your fingers, and therefore the rice becomes individual rice things again instead of this big blob. You can just dump the contents out of the plastic bag into the bowl that you want to eat the rice. Because I think that it's important to be able to reuse food, and that's what I'm thinking about today.
You mean if the rice comes out too soggy? Is that what you mean?
Well, sometimes when you let rice sit out, it gets hard. It gets kind of crusty. Well,
cooked rice.
Yeah, cooked rice.
Oh, cooked rice.
Cooked rice, and it's all ready to be eaten.
In a pan as well with a little bit of water.
Well, that's what I said. If you want to sog them, you can obviously make that happen. But another way to do that would be to which is kind of a mechanical thing, I guess it's kind of reskill, and it's a reuse of food a little bit. So I'm just trying to defend how that was a reskill or a reuse, because you know these are just random. They got to fit somewhere. I thought they did. Now another feature that's way off in another hinterland is the idea of paraskilling. So I came up with this thing called paraskilling recently in a venture of information that I was surveying. And paraskilling is when you get a skill about 20 minutes before you teach it. So apparently in the third world, we have a lot of people who just don't really know, I don't know, physics, language, skills, that kind of stuff. And the student then just learns the next thing for the students to learn. So for instance, a teacher would be prepped to teach 10 minutes of a class. So they would then, you know, for an hour they'd study it, and then they would teach it for 10 minutes. And then they would walk out. And then another person would walk in who then knew the next thing for the next 10 minutes. So at the end of the day, what you have is education, because people are portraying content to people who don't know it in a group setting. However, this is not really a teacher teaching it. It's just someone who's mouthing words, who's very close to a computer in my mind, you know, just kind of spouting it out without the passion. So then, is this something that we should be striving for, where we just kind of just in time we learn things? Just in time is just all about manufacturing. If you ever know about it, you just, as soon as you make widget A, it pops into widget B because through some operation. But is education going to be like that, or do you want to have a subject matter expert who's an awesome teacher and just knows so much and just portrays to the students a little at a time? And I think it's a useful concept to consider, because I don't know, anybody on the street anywhere can sit down, learn something in an hour, and then teach someone for 10 minutes. Now, if that's the way we want to do our education system, then that's perfectly fine. Or ad hoc teaching, if it's just this is how you want to mentor people. So anyway, it's a aspect that's very similar to micro-volunteering, which is very small volunteering, but if everybody does it, then you can volunteer and make an impact. Same with paraskilling or parateaching. So isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
kind of what you're doing here, too, sort of.
Well, but I don't know what I'm talking about.
But if I right now, if I learn something from you,
yeah,
then I can go to the next person and I can teach them it in 10 minutes. And they can teach someone else in that in 10 minutes, too. So it's the same thing.
Well, and that's kind of human nature. It's almost parental. But this is more a didactic situation where you got 30 kids and you need to give them content with no one around who really knows what they're saying, but now they do, so.
If that's your only option, I guess that would work, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So how fascinating, where we have, so many skills that we can learn, but how many people, don't know those skills, but somebody does. So there's a whole thing about, hey, I learned something last week and I can share you, and I think that's what you were talking about earlier, Cindy, about just being in the practice of potentially sharing with others and being okay with that, knowing that this is a model that is working in the third world, and if it works in the third world, it can work in the Portland neighborhood of Greater Louisville.
Did you read about this?
Yeah, I did.
It's in third world.
It is in third world, yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, they're doing this now.
In their school system?
Uh-huh, mm-hmm, yep. Yep.
Do you have anything you can read on that?
No, but we do have Google, so you can just find out about a real killing. You just looked up a paraskilling, and then it'll just pop up right there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, well, then there's this another random idea. I don't know if you're interested in jumping in and saying, well, I got a random idea too, but if you don't, then I'm going to go ahead and talk about mushrooms, which is, I think there's mushrooms all out there in the wild. So you just get in your car or your bicycle and go into the wilds and then find some mushrooms and then take them back to a dark, damp place somewhere near your house, throw down some wood and inoculate it, drill a hole, put some of the, just goop the mushrooms in there. Because I think you inoculate for mushrooms by just throwing some mushrooms into the log. Now I don't know if it's
spores.
I don't know if it does it have to be spores or can it be not spores. See, I just think if it has to be spores, then it has to be really expensive and special and at the right time. But if you could just throw mushroom material into some hole,
they've got spores on them. I'm pretty sure.
Well, this is what I'm hoping, because there's this thing called biology, and for a long time mushrooms haven't been spores, and they probably, have been thrown around by some tusk of some warthog, and they just kind of reestablished themselves. This is what I'm feeling in my heart. So what a fun reason to go out into the wilderness and find some cool mushrooms, and don't just eat them, but put them, just bring them to your house, stick them in a log, drill a hole, there you go. You got organic, locally grown, Kentucky or Indiana made mushrooms. And then of course you can take a picture of the mushrooms that you're harvesting, and you can, bring it to the some agency that will tell you that it's poisonous or not, which is fine. So that's all the more reason why everyone should just go out. Right about now, I think they're popping out good a little bit later too, but just go out into the wilderness, enjoy yourself, and with a reason. Mm-hmm. And you can start an LLC for $50, and you can then write it all on your taxes, all the expenses. I mean, if you want to go that far. Okay, and another thing that happened to me this week is that I figured out that I like to bike to all over the places every day, and I also like to bike with my handle without any handlebars. I just kind of no-handed, and kids are like, "Oh, look at them," but I feel very comfortable. I can see more better, and it's kind of you don't have to hunch over so far, so your body's not quite so tensed up. But I realized that I could get more power if I somehow could hold onto the handlebars, but I can't because my arms are not that long when I'm standing upright. Sitting upright. So then I figured out I don't have one. I could have brought one, but I find a stick on the street or in the avenues, and it's got a little crook in it. It's got a backwards hook, and so you just take that stick and then you hook it around the stem, not the handlebar because that'll make it go off, but around the stem, and then you hold on real tight, so that gives you force, and then you can be much stronger in your legs, get more leg power because you are forcing it up against the stick power. So it's kind of interesting how, you know, I've never thought of it. I've never seen it. Mm-hmm. I've never even imagined that a stick could be configured in that way. But if you take a Y stick and do it in a certain way, you can hook it real nice, kind of like an umbrella, you know, hook or something like that. So, you know, that's kind of neat. So me being just mindful of, oh, what can I share with the reskilling group? I come up with some really weird things. That's what I say. So does anybody that have anything that they would like to share with the group because they can?
I have seen the mushrooms growing a few this year. I'm not sure what they are, so I haven't researched them, but I have a decaying tree stump in the front yard. And now all along where the root is underground, I'm seeing a little path of mushrooms on the surface. Breaking down, yeah.
And people can realize that that's protein right there. They can eat it. And so they don't have to go to Kroger that day.
Depending on the species, yeah.
Well, I mean, all mushrooms are full of protein. Some are more edible than others, I would say. But it is a highly intimidating subject because of the fears associated with not wanting to die. But again, we have the internet, we have our cameras, we have Google. We can really overcome our innate fear of death by knowledge. This is where this all comes down to. So we can walk into the realm of fear and have no fear. Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you a story that happened this week, last week, I was biking from work.
Hey, come on in.
I was biking from work, and I ran into this guy. I'm not going to say his name, his last name, but his first name is Tony, because it's pretty obvious. Pretty usual name, that Tony. So what Tony did was that he had these goggles on his face, and then he had this apparatus in his body that was like, I don't know, hooked to his chest. And then right about that moment, I heard this, and then I looked up and this guy, and there was nothing there, and I knew that Tony had a drone. And so Tony had this drone, and then I looked at him like, you know, like, Tony, what's this, kind of cool. He couldn't tell that I was there because, like, he had these goggles on. But after a while, I, like, you know, hemmed and hawed, and they said, oh, there you are. So he landed it, and he talked to me and all about all that kind of stuff, which is, oh, how cool is that you can do a drone? You know, and then he says, in general, one can say, what can you do with a drone? And it's like, well, you can look inside people's windows, right? Like, no, I don't. There's no doing that. That's totally illegal. That's a felony, all that kind of stuff. But it's the first thing that people think of. It's like, what do you do with one of those things? You know, it's like an alien just kind of hovering right outside your freaky.
So what does he do with it?
Well, I don't know what he does with it, but what I do, well, he just loves it. No, he doesn't. I can't speak for him, but I just did. But I wanted to share that he loves the technology of it. Like, oh, how fun is that? This is like, you know, reskilling. I'm skilling myself up for, you know, loving this. It's all Bluetooth. It's just, you know, he's got a battery pack, his GPS. I'm like, wow. But then I was thinking, what could Tony really do? And Tony could do this. He could, see, I'm a nerd. I want to know how many people have solar panels on their roofs. Wouldn't it be, I mean, I cannot see who's got a solar panel on the roof because this is just too dense of a population. The houses are everywhere and randomly not too many anyway. You know, you go to the Highlands, that's a different thing. But it would be kind of fun to just kind of see. And then maybe if somebody does have a solar panel, we just kind of put a little thing on their doorknob saying, thank you for being solar-minded or something like that, for those who are so interested in doing something like that. So I'm going to be, you know, following up, knocking on the door, saying, you know, would it be possible for you to just kind of just give an idea of how many solar panels? Because I know that there's at least one house in Portland that has a solar panel. I can say that definitively. But I'm not going to say who because, you know, all that kind of stuff. So does anyone have any feelings or thoughts associated with drones or solar panels or counting solar panels in the Portland area. We have a guest here, which happens to be another person. And so that you're welcome as well as everyone.
This is the first time that you're here, and yes. Welcome.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Would you like to introduce yourself, or you can stay anonymous?
I'm Travis Schuster, resident of Portland, West End.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
I just met Travis the other day. He was walking the neighborhood, and we struck up a conversation. It was lovely.
Yes.
Thank you for coming.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah.
I'm director of the guitar program at the West Louisville Performing Arts Academy. I was putting that plug for the kids. And
nice.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
501c3
Oh, okay. I'm just throwing my guitar at. Not gonna play the guitar. Not gonna play the guitar. Well, just a couple of minutes ago, we did sing the song "Let There Be Peace on Earth and Let It Begin with Me." Yeah, that guitar is just more work than it is worth. Is that right? Yeah, that's fine. But anyway, so okay.
Seriously, and via the arts and math and science tutoring, it's very important that we utilize the arts that have been stripped so bare in our public school systems that we through 501c3 and faith-based organizations, not so faith-based organizations, we get people bring that discipline for children, that discipline and structure that they need so much through the arts, through classical, jazz, gospel music, serious music. Not to put hip hop down, but real music.
Yeah. Yeah, once you have the basics, then you can go off onto the trendy stuff.
Well, that's fun because I just I watched an episode of Mozart in the Jungle yesterday. That is a kind of a little show about musicians who are really into music, and you can tell that they're artistic and love it and have an ambiance that can be learned but also comes through their soul.
Mm-hmm. Nice plug.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, oh, okay. So I have a very complicated subject that I'd like to talk to now, and that's called I have a backyard buddy. Backyard buddies are somebody that can help with planting plates of seeds in the backyard. So, for instance, not even in the backyard, it could just be in the house or the porch. But typically, if it's a backyard buddy, it's not someone that you like really know, but it's in the neighborhood, and they can like facilitate someone who's kind of tenuous about the idea of just kind of putting plants in a tray and then growing them up, and then later transplanting them out to the garden when it's a lot warmer. Because now, being the end of February, is the time where you want to plant indoors so that they get a good start, and you can transplant them when they're warmer because they're established, and they don't have to fight the weeds. And you, as a gardener, don't have to tell, is that a weed or is that the thing? The thing is already 2, 3, 4 inches high when you put it in the ground. So but how does someone just say, oh, I think it's important that you put a tray out and start doing this and that with seeds? And I think that people would like to have someone encourage them, because it's not that it's behaviorally tough, because people have hands and feet and they can actually. Yeah, feet, because you need to, move to go get the soil and then put the soil on the tray, and then you need hands to smooth out the tray.
I did the first part. I used my feet to go to a place where I could use my hands to purchase a packet of rosemary seeds.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so
yeah.
I did part of it with hands and feet.
Yeah, good. No, yeah, definitely.
Sorry I laughed at you.
Oh yeah, well I mean we're not going there, but we generally know that, we have the ability but are not so confident, and just like anything, it's nice to have camaraderie, associations, and all that kind of stuff to just say, take it up a notch. You know, so you did this last year, you know, go 3-4 times more than you did this year.
Yeah.
And of course, the reason you want to do that is to kind of reskill and be re-energized for being all things local rather than just going to Walmart and buying the plants when they're for a top dollar. You
well,
put them in the ground.
I'm good at the part of buying the seeds, but I'm not really good, and I need the buddy system planting the seeds. So you have a point there. Because I could buy loads and loads of seeds and never get them in the ground or get them in any kind of earth.
You need motivation, is that what you're saying?
I guess I want to hear about this buddy thing.
Well, that's all it is. I have nothing more other than just to say there's a need.
You can't hook me up with buddy?
Well, it has to do with healthy habits. Healthy habits. If once you get into the habit of doing this, that's fine. Then you can become a backyard buddy. Now, it would be fine if some like a neighborhood association or something like that gave you a badge that said, I'm a backyard buddy, because some people don't really trust people. And it's like, who are you? Well, I'm a backyard buddy. You see, I'm a badge number 372. And then,
so you don't have a list of backyard buddies yet.
No, but it can be generated, and this is a system that can be in place, and we could turn it into a 501c3 if we wanted to, or we could just do it ad hoc, I don't know, by Facebook or a hashtag or something like that. But for me to just say, oh, wouldn't it be nice, because there's a need, it's not that you can't do it, it's just that one needs encouragement and to take it to the next level and generate healthy habits and then share those healthy habits with others. Capiche? Yes, kumbaya? Group hug? Not yet. Okay. Now, does anybody have anything that they'd like to share in terms of reskilling, reusing, philosophical, large scale, or just on a minor level? Okay, so you have been doing stuff. Looks like you've been like using your hands and feet. Talk about it.
Well, I didn't use my feet, but I
yeah,
definitely
you did.
Used my hand. Well, I had to walk to get to this house.
Mm-hmm.
Replacing windowsills that were totally missing or deteriorated to the point of, you know,
dust.
You couldn't, there's no way of salvaging what was there. So broken windows and windowsills. So, you know, doing some basic skills, getting the wood, cutting it, measuring, cutting, and trying to figure out how to, you know, line them up and fit them in and take out the old stuff using power tools. And that was the fun part, cutting the nails that were lodged in the wood in mysterious places that I would never have thought. But using a reciprocating saw to do that with the right blade. And so now I have beautiful sills and on three windows, and the next step will be to start addressing the broken glass problem. And so the inspector's going to be very happy with me. Yay!
Okay, well, if you don't mind, I'll just ask a little question. Like, what is the rationale for, I mean, why you went about this approach doing this?
What do you mean, the rationale?
Why'd you do it?
Why?
Yeah.
Because the inspector was on my butt.
And the water comes in if there's no windowsill and rocked out.
I had to do it anyway. I can't badmouth the inspector because the inspector was doing his job and he's trying to save the building from being, you know, getting more deteriorated. So, yeah, that's a picture of me.
Keeps the water
with the reciprocating
from rotting out stuff.
And what were some of the features of the design that you were considering?
I don't understand your question. Features of what design? What do you mean?
Hey.
Come on in.
No, I mean, how did you design it? How did you know that what you were doing was going to work?
I didn't, but I figured this basic woodworking, I mean,
basic, you decided,
yeah.
Pressure treated.
The house is constructed of wood and nails, and if you know some basic stuff, you just take it apart and replicate what was there. It's just pretty easy. I don't know, it just makes sense.
And how did you determine the scope of this? How did you figure out, oh, I need to, you know, this is going to be something I have that has a beginning, middle, and end?
You're asking me hard questions. I just got up in the morning and said, you know, I got to do this. It's
now,
my day, so I'll measure them, and then I'll go by the woods, and it's just kind of like, start doing it, jump in, because if you don't jump in, if you keep trying to plan it, you might not. I had a backup plan in case it didn't work. I would just tarp over to cover so the water wouldn't go in if it rained, and I hadn't finished the sills, but generally, you just jump in, and if and then you figure it out. You do one step at a time, and if you can't figure it out, then you just, you know, tarp over it, and the next day try to figure out another plan. Okay.
So what surprised you about the entire process that you were not looking, you didn't anticipate?
It was a lot easier than I thought it would be. And the first one was kind of crazy, but I tackled the first one I tackled was the one that looked in the worst condition, which probably is not the best way to do it. You should probably warm up to it. So tackle the one that's the least trying. But I did it the opposite. I went for the worst one because I wanted to get it done. It was in the worst shape and I needed to get it covered. So, but just, I don't know.
Well, and also, I'm sorry for these questions, but this is useful for didactic, you know, it's kind of like, what were the feelings that you had that you probably had to overcome in order to be, you know, confident and make it happen?
The first feeling was like, this is never going to work out. Well, if I don't do it, it's definitely never going to work out. If I try, it might work out. So that was the first thing, just kind of talking myself into it. And I'm just going for it and saying, well, at least I have a backup plan just in case it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Well, that has that's a good ring to it.
Jump in, because if you don't jump in, you'll never get it started. I thought, if I don't get it started, I'm never going to get it finished.
Well, that's cool.
And they look fantastic. I thought that because there's aluminum siding over the sills and the window frames, and I thought for sure that it would look ridiculous with wood sills. And I didn't want to take the aluminum siding off the framework. So I just combined. It looks great with aluminum siding on the framework and wooden sills. It looks fantastic.
Well, that sounds really great, but I know that there's one thing that you said about that which is incorrect, and that is not aluminum siding, vinyl siding.
Well, it's aluminum siding around the window. It's vinyl. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. All the framework of the windows.
Well, then I take back my statement and just give you an A+ on that one. That was excellent. Does anybody else have something that they'd like to share about their month? Because, you know, you've got an A+ here. Does anybody want to share their A++?
I just wanted to ask the question. You know, we're working with a lot of these older homes. How common is it to come across asbestos? Is that a common thing?
Most of it just be on your siding or your heating, ductwork around the furnace.
Linoleum?
Could be in some older linoleum.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mostly where I run across, it's like on furnaces.
Yeah. In your basement, perhaps, in places that no one really likes to go.
Gas fireplaces, too. Some of the old ones. The really old ones have like a piece of tin at the back, and it's covered with this kind of crumpy looking fluffy stuff. A lot of times that's asbestos.
Yeah. If you come across it, though, you put on a mask, you put on gloves, and you wet it down.
Keep it wet.
And you keep it wet, and you remove it, and you immediately place it into plastic bags.
What are you going to do with it after you put it in the bag?
Well, you have to look into that and see where you're supposed to dispose of it. I would think that you would call the...
Because if you go out and you try to actually do this by yourself and you don't get permits for it, you're in violation of state laws and federal laws. Dealing with kitty litter jobs, as you were describing, vinyl and aluminum siding. I came up with the term some years ago with kitty litter job, because you're just trying to hide, cover up what's actually there.
Right.
That's a good term.
If you are the homeowner and you're scraping paint, you're allowed to scrape paint without getting any kind of permits or let anyone know.
Yeah.
But if you are a contractor and you start scraping paint and it has lead in it, you better be prepared to do it correctly, because you know, there's a procedure and you need to be certified to do it. But as the homeowner, you are permitted to work on your own home. Now, don't be a homeowner here and go work on someone else's house, because then that's when you're in violation.
Now, you can do the paint, but you can't do the asbestos.
Right.
Because it's two different things and they behave differently. Where the asbestos is airborne, it just gets in the air and breathes.
The lead from the paint is also airborne.
Yeah, but most of the problems is people eating it, ingesting
okay.
it.
And also, when you have chipping paint, yes, but when you're removing it, if you're sanding it or you're chipping it away, it's basically the same thing. It gets airborne.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that there's good library books on this, abatement of lead, abatement of asbestos? Because you asked a really good question. There's a lot of houses in Portland exactly like this scenario. Yeah. Have you ever considered that possibility? Because it's certainly intimidating to me.
Well, there's a lot of information out, but not necessarily sitting in the library, because there's so much information out there about everything, you can't put it all in a library. So you go on the internet. If you want really, really real guidelines, you go to the department, the federal government, the Department of the Interior, the federal parks. They have guidelines for doing restoration, is how to work on old buildings. And they have guidelines on all that.
Yes.
And you can,
but
then you run into problems because it's the federal government and people don't want somebody to tell me what to do or how to do it. You know, and so there's a pushback against it.
That's
all right?
I'm fine. You're just like, okay, that's a whole can of worms right there.
When it's your own property, you pretty much can do what you want.
Yeah.
But when you're being paid by someone, that's when you have those issues.
Well,
that's why the contractors sometimes don't get permits, because
yeah.
they don't want to be identified.
There's a difference between that, also between it's my property and I can do what I want to do, and you don't follow guidelines, and you wind up doing more damage on your structure. Because this is what I want to do and how.
Just because
it.
It's lawful doesn't mean it's beneficial. Yeah.
Sure.
Well, in most cases, the reason for guidelines, there is a reason for a guideline. It's not just somebody trying to put roadblocks up for everything. You know, you have to actually go in and investigate. Go on the internet and find out what's going on. The biggest part of a restoration job of working on an old building is to find out the background on the materials that were used. And you have to, you know, go along with what's really real. Because the structure, you might be able to fool yourself, but you can't fool the structure.
And the National Park Service does have some good place you cited, like for old mortar mix that has the lime, because you can't put the hard mortar, because it'll do more damage to your old soft bricks, and that's a good reason.
You're destroying the building.
Right,
or
right.
if you use my, Portland cement,
right.
which was invented in 1811 in Portland, England, which makes a waterproof joint, and so it holds the water in the old brick, and it's spalling is what it's called, where the water will face or will force the face of the brick off.
And that's like
or expansion and contraction, or freezing.
Exactly. When I did my brickwork over my back door, I had to mix my own mortar because it's old brick and you can't just put a cement product in.
Well, at the end of the day, how many
people can research this and find
how many people are going to just go ahead and say, oh, the code inspector said I have to redo something on my brickwork. Let me go get some cement and go do it. So how do you stop, just say, stop right there. That's the wrong thing to do. How do you educate people beforehand or as it happens? I mean,
it's everyone's own responsibility to find out.
Ouch. That was not the answer I was looking for. Holy smokes.
It's always the person's responsibility. Or if they call someone to do the work for them, then it's their responsibility to make sure that they know what they're looking for when they hire someone to do it. I don't know how many times, that's why I do stuff myself, because I don't want someone to come who has no idea what they're doing. It's like, no, I'm going to find out. Even like if I'm going to put a roof on my house, I'm going to find out how it has to work so that when I start interviewing, I know what to ask and I know if they're going to do the job right. So it's the homeowner's responsibility. Now, whether that happens,
Well, here we are in Portland. A lot of people are poor. So do they have their family members kind of do their work for them if they're elderly or something like that? And so they don't necessarily know either. So, I mean, it's...
But people like you have to get out there and start telling them.
This is kind of where I'm going.
I try to educate distributors of products. You can go in all the big box home stores, Lowe's and Home Depot and all that. And you go in and you look at their stock and no one has the appropriate materials.
Exactly.
You talk to the individuals that are working and they have no knowledge.
Right.
You go into the hardware stores and I've gone into the little store up the street and tell them I want hydrated lime, is what it's called for the old buildings. Anything built before World War II. You know, look at it and say, well, all this stuff is good for is fertilizer and marking ball fields.
Right.
And you try to tell them they don't want to know.
Exactly.
And they want to sell what they have.
Sure.
And so that's where 99% of the actual problem comes from, because somebody will go into a store and see the sales representative and think that they're knowledgeable, and they'll put on the air that they are knowledgeable. Oh, well, this will work great. This is in a bag, and it says cement.
They lead them down the wrong path. Yes.
No.
Menards also carries hydrated lime.
But you are bringing up an interesting issue in a larger scale, which is that corporate products that are made internationally, et cetera, are not necessarily juxtaposing with the local laws. There's a mismatch there, and there should be, I mean,
there's
some
no
sort
law.
Of a talk between
no law.
Corporations and
there's
law.
There's no law that says you have to put the right stuff in your bricks.
Right.
There's no law.
I'm not talking about laws. I'm talking about common sense.
Okay, but you just said something about laws, so I'm just clarifying.
Well, I was wrong, and you're clarifying. Do you want to make the statement again, rephrased as it should be?
There are no laws, but there's knowledge that's being lost, and so people are not informed. They don't know. Sometimes they don't have the time to do the research, or they don't know how to do the research. So the people that do know it really need to.
I guess my point is totally different from that, which is if you know what you need to do and you can't find it at Lowe's, that's a major problem. That's it. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Definitely. Sometimes you have to really be innovative to try to figure out how to do stuff.
No, I'm saying there's people who make millions of dollars who know to solve this and they don't. Why don't they do that? And this is a reason why we need to be up in arms, I guess. This is a mismatch.
Well, Travis wanted to say something.
Well, I'm just gonna ask you a question. You know, we look in the Portland area and we all, if you're like me, we like to support small business. And I started out having a very, you know, respectful attitude towards Ace hardware, you know, small business.
Right.
And they do give off the air that they're very helpful, and they probably are. But clearly over the years, I was probably a lack of knowledge. I was just wondering, in concrete way, where have we noticed their knowledge not really being up to snuff?
I'm going to say generally of all hardwares.
But just generally.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't mind, I think that there's something beautiful which is just happening in my head, which is called the flower of an idea, and that doesn't happen often, so I got to share it right away. That is that if we go to like Lowe's, Home Depot, Ace, anywhere, a hardware store, just make sure that there is a bulletin board that has, I don't know, telephone numbers of people that are on some Annie's list. Is it Angie's list?
Angie.
Which means that they're kind of validated. They're a little
bit
cool. They're not like stupid and they're not druggies and they're not going to just ruin your house and things like that. I mean, is this an important aspect too, that the physical space could be used for networking and interconnections? Talk to me.
I guess. Sure. Why not? I think that they do have people put their cards up in certain places. I don't know about Lowe's and Home Depot, but I know the small box ones like Oscar's on Shelby, is it Shelby Street?
Shelby and Burnett.
Yeah, but I do know that some of the employees at Oscar's, no names going to be mentioned here, they don't necessarily know how to do windows. Like, if someone brings a window in the past, there were people there that would say, okay, I know how to re-rivet this metal window thing, but now I just heard of someone going in and being turned away saying that there was no one there that could do it for them.
No.
So, you know, things are changing. These skills are dying. They're being lost.
Well, I think that's the point of this whole class, if it's not at a philosophical level, which is we need to reskill to something that's valid, and this is just such a low-lying fruit. It's just stupid that we even have to mention it, because there's so much money to be made in all this kind of stuff, and we're just chatting about ideas. I mean, why aren't they out there fixing this and just living their life on the Miami beach, because this is the way to get lots of money, because people put money into their houses. They want to. They have to.
Oh, it's a replacement window. I thought you were talking original.
No, if it was original, I'd have no problem with it because I rebuilt the old wood windows.
Now, the replacements are...
They're horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get the inspector off my back. So that's why I did the wood windowsill, so that now there's no water going in. So, but the glass is going to be an issue. It can be done, but it's better probably...
Make sure you caulk it and actually paint it.
Oh, yeah, you want
to paint it before you assemble it, because most people think, well, we just paint the visible part.
Yeah.
And you have moisture and air moves around the whole thing.
That's true.
And so you have to actually paint them because a lot of your...
Especially if it's not treated wood.
Right.
Right, this is treated wood, so it's not as bad. But I will be caulking, because I'm a window person. I do the windows, and so generally I don't work on these types of windows. I work on the old wood windows so that people don't have to put these windows in their house. But this is a house that was abandoned that I purchased to save it, because it was just going to end up getting demolished. So I purchased it, and now I have to deal with the broken glass and all the stuff.
And all those things need to be fixed before you can turn around and either flip the house or rent it or things like that. So these are important things, have to be done, and you're doing it, which is perfectly fine. Now, if you don't mind, I'm just kind of, is there anything else that people want to talk about things associated with homes, buildings, sidewalks, that kind of stuff? Otherwise, we're going to talk about John, and we're going to talk about rations. Anybody?
Well, back to the masonry. Stop painting brick buildings.
Yay!
Try to tell people, educate them.
Sometimes they don't want to listen to it because they love. I have a house that has painted bricks, and I'm letting it come off. And as it starts to come off, I'm encouraging it and pulling it off.
I've been going around and around with permits and license. I'm in a building that the old paint is flaking off of it, and I stand there explaining it to them what's going on, and they don't have a clue. Well, this is what this says, and I said, well, I don't care what that says, that wall says something different.
Right, exactly.
Now, you can fool yourself, but you can't fool the wall. You can't.
So now there's a mismatch between good thoughtfulness and what the codes and regs are listed as, which means changing state law, I guess, right?
People here in Portland with the different art groups that are going around painting these old brick buildings.
And
you can do it, but you have to use the right material. You have to go back to the hydrated lime.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You mix the paint and you can paint the wall. They used to call it whitewood.
Yeah.
You put pigment in it. The Maya used it like crazy. Even back to Corral Peru, 5,000 year old. Lime structure, stone structures that were put together with hydrated lime, and they were coated with, but I can't think of the word right now. Where you cover over.
Sparged.
No, there's stucco.
Stucco, yes.
And you have a water release that are done in stucco, lime plaster, and you add it pigment to the lime to get different colors. And it's still there, 5,000 years old.
Right.
Well, you'd think that students who are 22-year-old would already know that stuff. That's a joke.
Yep.
Well, but they're professors. If they're students, you know, or teachers, they should probably know that. And if not, how do we make sure that they do? Or just let them hurt their own houses. I guess if it's that they own it, they can just do what they want with it, and there goes the neighborhood.
I'd say 90% of them aren't meaning to hurt their house. They think they're doing the right thing by putting that hard mortar in, replacement windows. But, yeah.
Yeah. I don't have a hard copy on me, but I got it on a computer that I had brought. It was written in the early 80s by an individual in Old Louisville. Brick structures, oh, what damage we do. And he goes through point by point and, you know, points that down to where you actually have to look at what's going on and do the real research and not try to fool yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be Gary Klein.
I mean, what are we going to do with total information awareness? We're going to have cameras everywhere, and if you ever put your paintbrush to a brick, you can just say, excuse me, you need to call this telephone number first and get clarification. Otherwise, people are going to do what they want, and it's going to, or they're going to be infinitely... the problem is insoluble except through a military fascist state where everybody's locked down, and then it's easy to do. I can see the cell phones would just like be monitoring you, but in the context of kind of like laissez-faire, like don't tell me what to do, don't tread on me. You know, it's just the neighborhood's just going to be going down just because of nobody's intentionally hurting it, but it's this is what I'm sensing from our conversation, Galdarn.
Did you have another
question? Oh, I was only going to ask. In terms of houses, we're talking about houses. On Rudd Avenue, there's a home, the far left in Rudd Avenue. It used to be a bar.
Right.
And it seems like somebody will move in there and try to redo it, and then they'll leave, and it'll be deserted. And I'm just wondering, and I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot by saying, is that a home that cannot be rebuilt? Or
just the one closest to the flood wall at the end?
At this point, it can totally be.
I'm trying to remember the address.
32nd? 32nd.
Yeah.
Maybe a 32nd. It's very close to the flood wall. If you walk down the
entire park, right?
Yeah, I was just jogging past it last night and noticed that there's no windows, but the brick seems to be fine. But it's a lot worse than it was like a year ago. I mean, it's really, it's just going down.
Abandoned. There's another house on Rudd, just right behind us here.
Yeah.
I don't remember the address. The address ever got put back up, but it has a red tin roof on it. Mm-hmm. And it's a total different construction, design, with all the other houses in Portland.
I'll have to look for that.
Because most of you,
huh?
No, it's a frame house. Built in 1847, and it is associated with, I need to get back down to U of L, but it's associated with my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents.
That's a tall tale.
That's awesome.
No, it's been confirmed by
the archivist.
Archaeology Department at University of Louisville. It was part of Jansen District Development or Jansen Tract.
Okay.
That had a bunch of acres and a bunch of housing down there.
Well, it would be fun to find out what the oldest houses are in Louisville, in Portland, and make sure that they don't get run down.
Library claims that it's the Eric.
Squire Erickson,
Squire
whatever.
Erickson
over here.
Is the oldest, apparently.
No, like the top 10 or the top 20. Not just the oldest, but, you know.
They who go back earlier, that house was built in the early 1800s. Probably 30s or 40s.
They say oldest frame of the house.
But you had down in Portland proper, saw an article on Facebook that was just released today about new development in Portland proper, or Portland Park, was supposed to be taking place. they have a committee together that's supposed to be developing. But you have houses that were built before 1811. 1811 was when Portland was incorporated or made a town. So you had a guy named Fontaine that was coming up from New Orleans in the 1780s. And he was coming into Kentucky buying tens of thousands of barrels of Kentucky bourbon whiskey. And they were shipping it down the river, and they ran into the falls. So then they had to, they were losing too many of them. They were trying to run the rapids.
Right. They had to portage.
And so then they had to port it, unloaded it, and brought it down to port.
Mm-hmm.
That's how the Portland came about.
And that's our name, too, yeah.
Exactly. That's all in the Tom Owen TV.
Well, and it's Fat Tuesday. I thought I might share that, too, because you did mention the word New Orleans.
Yeah.
Well, there's a big connection with New Orleans here, I think, yeah. From the river.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. Well, what I've been doing is, while you guys have been talking about buildings, and there are so much to be talking about buildings, I've also been just salivating looking at the food that's in front of us. And I want to share with us, just kind of moving a little bit in the food area, if you don't mind. And that would just have some things I want to share, and then I want to get your reaction, too, if you don't mind. There's like three things, which is, first one is that Kroger has a really cheap, these are $1 for peanut butter. This is organic. You don't want to get the other stuff that is not natural because it's got plastic in it, hydrogenated vegetable oils. This one, again, has a little bit of oil on the top. You have to just stir it around once and then you refrigerate it. It should be fine. But it is $1. Usually it's like $2.50. I've never seen it that cheap, so I just like did a lot. There's a lot of fiber and fat and protein in that. So just eat peanut butter, and when it's on sale, go for it.
The ingredients are great for the price. Roasted peanuts and salt. That's all. No other oil, because sometimes if it's got cottonseed oil or something, they'll press the peanut oil off, sell that, and put a cheaper oil in its place.
Yep.
Roasted peanuts and salt.
I guess. Simple. Yeah. So just that's a skill, which is to know how to eat wisely and cheaply. Another food that I want to encourage people to consider is these are raisins, and I buy them in a terrible container. And you rip them out of the container, you put them into another container where they...
You should be using glass, not plastic.
Yeah, one should always use glass whenever possible. I do have a glass container here for water, by the way. But anyway, back to raisins. The thing I like about raisins as a fruit, I mean, fruits are good, and there are a lot of different reasons we all know why they're good, but they're dehydrated, and therefore you're not transporting water from, I don't know, California, Florida. You're just transploding the fiber and the protein and the sugars and the nutrients that are in there. So I'm all about raisins and, just mass produce them, make them cheap. The other thing, too, is that if you take a grapevine from your neighbor, like, hi, neighbor, I'm not going to tell you, but I'm just going to take a clipping of your grapevine. Clip.
Is your way to get shot.
Or your backyard buddy or whatever it was.
Backyard buddy.
Yeah.
If you stick.
You can always ask for a piece.
Well, but it's easier than that even. You can just do a midnight requisition. But you just take a clipping, about 6 inches, 8 inches, 18 inches, and then you just stick it in the ground. It will just produce roots, and it'll root right for you. So that's how easy it is to make your own grapes. So you don't have to buy raisins. You could ultimately just make your own raisins from all the proliferation of the grapevine that is in your yard, because they grow really well in Kentucky, not just in Champagne, France, or Napa, California. Like right here, right now, I guess we all know that, but it's just good to be reminded. And for anybody who's listened to this recording, just make your own raisins, I guess, or just eat them when they're raw is probably the best thing to do. Yeah, when they're grapes. Another thing is I guess ginger, I don't know that it grows in this area. You can grow it in California, but ginger root is just very good for your body. So just shave it off, put it in the freezer, and you can just use it once. I mean, shave it once, and then you can use it a little bit for a long, long time, and it's all good for your immune system. And so I'm a person who just kind of likes to eat my oatmeal and rice and whatever, and just kind of like, oh, do I have to have vegetables? Like, yeah, you do, but also the other phytochemicals, and there's a certainly an easy one right there. And if you want to, you could just like make a slurry, you could put it inside your peanut butter and all that kind of stuff. There's no end to how many interesting stuff you can do with food, and I only bring it up just to play with ideas. And now that we've played with ideas, that's cool. Now, does anybody mind if we stop talking about food and we start talking about salt? Seeing nobody who's not going to be feeling negative about talking about salt, we will talk about salt right now, which is salt is mostly sodium chloride. And that can be in high amounts, very tasty. Can be in amounts, also not very good for your cardiovascular system over a long period of time, because our kidneys are made to eat lots of potassium and save the sodium, because historically we've been so sodium poor. Now we're sodium rich and we're potassium poor. So what I did is to go to, I just showing this here, which is I went to Lowe's or something like that and bought 40 pounds of potassium chloride water softener. Now that's potassium chloride. You crush it up into a mortar and pestle and then add 50-50, really table salt and then potassium chloride. So it's a nice mix and it feels good in your tongue. This is too sharp. If you just go ahead and stick your tongue on it or just lick it, it's just like, that's too sharp. But if you add 50-50%, it's fine. So this is a good way to have, like if you grew up like me, which is loving, McDonald's French fries all day long, like love that salt. So this is part of who I am. Well, this is a way to have all the salt feel I want, but it's also very good because I get a lot of potassium and not so much sodium, which I try to get the word out. And which is
really cheap.
Yeah, 40 pounds for like 10 bucks, and that's the salt you need
for
the rest of your life.
For the rest of your life.
Otherwise, you can go to Kroger and you can buy something that's pretty expensive. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. And let's see, anything else we can talk about in the kitchen? I guess we can talk about this, which is a whisker. See, if everybody doesn't own that, you can have that, which is just, you can whisk things up. And who knew that a whisker would be cool? But I don't have any good demonstrations of how it is cool. Yeah, it whisks. And plus, this one right here, if you go ahead and buy some sort of, tortillas or anything else, they can be expensive, but you can make them yourself with a roller. Okay, it's just you just go buy flour, really cheap, and then you just add water, flour, roll it out, and there you can mass produce whatever you want, those, thin pancakes or flatbread and all that kind of stuff. But again, doing it yourself. Not that you can, because right now it's so cheap at Kroger to buy the regular.
Very, very bad for you.
But they're bad for your health. They got bad ingredients. You can just make it out of flour yourself, and you can put cornstarch and all kinds. You can put corn, other ingredients without having any detriment,
right.
And you can go ahead and make your own. So if
leave out the hydrogenated oils and whatnot.
Yeah, I don't have any of that tortilla stuff.
I forget the name of it, but
yeah,
there is a brand.
So expensive.
That is more expensive than the cheaper ones, but it is way healthier for you, and I have a coupon here, so I'm going to look to see what the brand name is, and when I find that, I will tell you, but that's the one you want to buy.
The thing I want to share, though, is that you need to have a little bit of counter space, so it's kind of a reskilling means you need to retool having enough room to have a little roller. You can also use, if you have a jelly jar, you can just turn it sideways and you can roll things out if you have no space whatsoever. But it's also better to just use a roller. So you think most people? Well, this is what I don't know. Wouldn't it be fascinating to find out going door to door saying, how big is your counter? I don't know. Some people like me ask these questions in their head.
Weird questions.
Yes, yes.
The name of the brand of tortilla that is the one that has the healthiest is Tortilla Land. And they're more expensive, but...
What is it?
Tortilla Land.
Oh,
that's the brand name.
Tortillas.
Are they real tortillas or are they wheat?
They're
wheat. They're not corn.
They're not real ones.
No.
They're not.
They are wheat.
Mm-hmm. Talking about food and just jump right up the maze.
Yes.
I don't know if anybody's familiar with the lock and key theory of food.
Don't know.
To where certain foods, you have to do certain processes for it to be nutritional.
Okay.
Or it could even be to the point to where it could be poison.
Nemetalization or something like that is what corn needs to have. It needs to be heated to the point where it's, there is a term that needs to characterize, so the niacin is released.
Well, you're on to a point.
No, that's true, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the mid 1500s, after contact with Mexico,
yes.
And maize was brought to Europe, in Italy, they named a new infliction. They called it pellagra. Pellagra is Latin for sour skin. Now the skin, the exodermis, would start bubbling up in big patches, and big patches of skin would fall off.
Mm-hmm.
And the people would start suffering from fluxes from the bowels. And then they would go insane.
Mm-hmm.
And most
that's
of
lack of niacin because they ate the corn without nemetalization of it to release the niacin.
No. It was actually in the mid-1800s, they had a big conference across Europe trying to determine the causation of the pellagra. And they were coming up, well, it was hereditary because it was running generation after generation after generation in poor farmers. And so, you know, it was off on that. And then there was a bunch of other stuff. There was a Mexican doctor of Mayan descent that was touring Europe at the time, heard about conference, went to the conference, and they said, tell me the symptoms. And so they explained the symptoms to him, skin falling off and the fluxes in the bowels and insanities. Most of the insane asylums were actually pellagra asylums. And when you see in the old movies, the old guys that are hanging up by the arms with the chains, big patches of skin gone, pellagra. Affected up to 20% of the population. But back to the doctor said, it's easy. You're not preparing your maize right, your corn right. You have to use either rye, lime, or wood ash.
That's what you're talking about.
Well, you were talking about just heating it.
I was wrong. You're right. Go ahead.
But you have to use rye, lime, or wood ash.
Right.
And even if you go back to the Popol Vuh, which is the mythic creation of the Maya, there was conflict with the maize. This is what the actual Popol Vuh is about. Because you had hero twins or sons of another character, the hero twin, that went to Shababa, which was the underground. And they killed him and sacrificed him. And they put his head in a tree. And so you have two hero sons from the head in the tree and a daughter of one of the lords of the underground that had a virgin birth. Now the hero took. But they go down to free him from the tree and defeat the lords of death, and they bring him back and he becomes the maize god. So it shows up the conflict because one part where but the hero twins are killed and they're sacrificed and they leave instructions showing that their bones should be crushed and added to water and boiled. And it could well, it doesn't actually explain it, that could well be the storytelling.
And one doesn't have to have it explained. All you need to do is just follow the myth through the stories. The power of all that is done in such a way that your chemistry is the way that you, so you can have healthy behaviors from the stories, from the ages. And so I don't think we generally have that in our culture. We just, you know, have science that does it. But stories are kind of a cool way because it brings in a whole sense of self rather than
science. Same time, I'm very into science.
I get it. It just, there's a different feel when you do it from from the deep up versus front lobe of your brain kind of a thing. I mean, I agree. I think I made my point, but I don't have the right language to say that.
Using the stories and myth myth is actually not something that's false, but it...
It's useful, yeah.
It's useful because it explains what's going on, how something came about. Mm-hmm. Got on Facebook an announcement for the health and education that the PNI that you're going to be putting together. Mm-hmm. I was sitting looking at it, and I was going to write a comment to it, well, it's going to wind up being 4 or 5 pages long. But one that I used when I was studying a epidemiology class at U of L, medical anthropology, took on vampires. And I went into the medical library, and they kind of looked at me funny, you know, and I said, well, you know, I didn't look like one of the medical students, and said, well, I'm in here doing research, and I'm looking for vampires. No, you've got to go down to Free Public Library to find out like that. But no, it won't be there. And so it took a while, and finally convinced them to use the computer because I didn't have the medical library card. And so I punch it up and go get 12 journal articles and pull up the vampire, the myth of the vampires. The origin is actually tuberculosis. And so I showed that to them, and they was what? You know? And so I was going to bring that up for the health and education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot there, I can tell. I could see how it could be 4 or 5 pages or 40 or 50 pages.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of stories
right
there.
How you're going to approach health, what areas of health,
mm-hmm.
How do you stay, what is health, or do you have health education, how to stay healthy, how to maintain a homeostasis. You know, there's just so much, and it's just so broad.
Sure. Well, and Homo sapiens has got it. We got it down. It's just that we just kind of don't share it, and we don't do it. You know, we kind of know what to do. Like, for instance, segueing into the next one, which is here's some beet seeds. You know, beets are easy. They grow really well. You put them in the ground, they just grow well. They're robust. They don't die and all those things. However, you know, just because we know that they're awesome doesn't mean that everyone likes them.
Yeah.
So the question then is, if you prepare beets in such a way that everybody loves them, then they're easy to grow and they're just so...
A little bit of vodka and borscht.
I have had them shredded and put in a salad so that you can barely taste them.
Yeah.
And if you can barely taste them, you can choke them down.
And fresh ones are a lot better than the canned ones.
They're used primarily, in that case, for presentation.
Right, exactly. It makes it look pretty.
Yeah.
Sure.
So the preparation is very important.
I had a salad with a little bit of shredded.
Well, isn't it a reskilling of what our educational system, who basically feed our children these days, that they present the carrots horribly? You know, you look at a carrot, it's like, no, I don't want to eat that. It looks terrible or something like that. So part of it has to do with spending dollars in making things look interesting versus just having it be kind of look ugly, taste ugly.
I want to ask you a question. I think this is really, what I'm going to ask is real pertinent to the Portland area, to these food deserts. I'm not sure if Portland's necessarily a food desert, but
it's
one.
It is. Yeah.
You know,
it's desert.
I love the band King Crimson, and one of their best albums actually is Kurt Cobain and Nirvana's biggest influenced album is called Red by King Crimson, John Wett and Robert Fripp and Bill Bruford. And in the 90s, I had friends from the East End, Eastern Jefferson County. We all got together. Hey man, let's get together, hang out for a while. And I said, well, what we got to eat? And he said, we got some beer here. That's some ramen noodles, man.
Those are the worst.
And so we had ramen noodles, and these are my friends in East. This is in Eastern Jefferson County. Rich musicians, artsy kind of guys like us. And so ramen noodles, from a cultural standpoint, we were just guys that just wanted to kind of hang out and party around and wanted to have something easy to make, and we made it, and it tasted good, plenty of salt. 900.
Yeah, gotcha. Right.
Yeah. And here's where this takes on another connotation up a few years here in the 2000s. And I look here in Portland, and I look in Kroger, or I look at Family Dollar, and I see a whole rack of these very inexpensive ramen noodles. Ramen noodle cookers they have at Family Dollar. And what's the buzzword that starts going off in my head is beyond just food. It's beyond just food, but we're getting now into class, we're getting into economics. Because here's my thing. When I see people go in that may not have that much money, they go in and they see this food, and they get a lot of it because it's real cheap, and you can feed a lot of people. Now, possibly you could bypass some of the packaged stuff, maybe the noodles along with some vegetables. Maybe there's a creative way to make these things more healthy. Mm-hmm. But the reason I'm bringing all this up is just to say that with our economy, when I go into Family Dollar and I see ramen noodle cookers, and I see so many ramen noodles, and I'll be honest with you, I still like them, but I will go in the Chinese section to get a little bit higher class ramen, because I'm such a snob.
20 cents but, more.
But 20 cents more, whatever.
Okay, still not bad.
I'm a positive ramen noodle, but I'm also aware that I'm ingesting 980 milligrams.
Right.
So my real question is, how much do you see when you go into Family Dollar, when you go into these stores that have some of the, the one Save-A-Lot does have a good vegetable section for what it is. But how do we impress upon people in this Portland culture who are living on a fixed income, how can you make those things healthier? How can you make these, and obviously you're doing part of that with the peanut butter, with the raisins, you're already doing. I'm just wondering how much you see food connected to the economics of Portland and
Well, the topic goes on forever. You've kind of hit something. First thing that comes to my mind is there are some movies on it already, some really good movies, but there also is some local food inroads here. I think community CSAs, community
supported
agriculture. What is it? Fresh Stop, things like that. And then there's the table, and then there's people growing locally. But yet it's very nuanced and off to the side. The central folks aren't getting a message, and they have no interest in. Why would they? Because the food tastes good and
Someone
it's cheap.
Would rather
so, I don't
go
know.
To McDonald's and spend that money and say, well, I can't feed my kids with that amount of money that I just bought McDonald's for. I can't feed my kids good food. Well, it's baloney, because you can make a big pot of soup for very little money. And you can pass the money that you spent at McDonald's, you could feed your kids for several nights with a big pot of soup, vegetable soup. Cut the meat out, cut the junk food out, the money you use, go buy veggies.
And then they really do move their vegetables. They really do move their vegetables along at the Kroger up here. They'll reduce them if they're lower, bag them up in that onion bag stuff. Mm-hmm. Sell them fairly cheaply on end caps.
Well, and I'm
mushrooms.
I know that I'm not the one to talk about this because I'm not poor, but a lot of times you don't have to pay $130 for a pair of sneaker shoes. Just buy a $10 one at Kmart and just get some shoe goo and keep them going, and then you can spend your money on food rather than, but part of that is education and part of that is just status seeking. I think last month I said you should put tire treads at the bottoms of your shoes.
Well, that's a little extreme.
And you don't have to
own them.
You don't have to go to the extreme that Nate would go to, but there are ways.
Last time I did, I do that to a pair of tennis shoes.
Buy food and stuff.
And you don't have to shop at Whole Foods to eat healthy. You don't have to afford to shop at Whole Foods to eat healthy. Like Cindy was saying, cut out dairy and meat and grease vegetables or just keep your meat in moderation.
And again, that's kind of the scope of the Health and Education Committee of the Portland Now, and which is on the Facebook. There's a meeting that's next Monday, and we're going to tackle that, and we're going to solve that problem within about 6 months. This picture right here, I want you to see, is a mountain of tires. So that is a semi-truck right there, and that's just, how many tires we're talking about. And so the garbage is overwhelming. And the other thing about, pass it along to the others.
One, wasn't that in New York back in the 70s or early 80s that had a big mound like that and a ton on fire?
Yeah, and now I think they're shipping them all over to India, and now they have big, they're not around here anymore.
But we have environmental restrictions now, plus it's cheaper.
I think the most horrible thing I've seen for old tires is when they chop them up and make it into mulch. They even color ice it too, and they make it like red and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, but that stuff is toxic.
Yeah, well, there doesn't have to be an easy button. Right, no, there doesn't have to be. So, but that is something I wanted to share, which is, you know, shoes versus food. It's kind of, I'm not there. I need to knock on people's doors and find out their world, because to me, there's just so many no-brainers, and it's a huge issue, and there's something in the way, and I resolve to understand that.
I think it's about choices, personal choices. If you'd rather pay $150 for a pair of shoes and then eat, you know, McDonald's whenever you can afford a hamburger here, because it is cheap, $1 hamburger or whatever it is.
Well,
it's yummy, but it's not good for you.
Part of it's education too, but then motivation. Yeah.
Well, there is so much that I didn't get to today, which I want to share some of those things. Just, I mean, we didn't talk about using a towel to stretch your hips out, and we didn't talk about the tennis ball in order to find your tight spots, and because you want to exercise, but then you get stiff, and then you want to be able to resolve that. We didn't talk about how to create a rain garden in your front yard, and how to dig holes in your yard in order to stay cool, which is in the Portland Anchor if you haven't read that article yet. And we haven't talked about how to make a citizen's arrest by taking a bullwhip, and so they can't get their gun before you put them down to the ground. Yep. And we didn't talk about the seed swap at all, which is there's going to be the ability for people to grab seeds here on March 11th and four other times, where if you don't have beet seeds like here, you can just grab them, and they've got food. They've got seeds from, bring some. They've got from High Mowing Corporation, Bounty Beyond Belief Corporation, Seed Savers Exchange, Baker's Creek Seeds, RareSeeds.org. We didn't talk about we didn't talk about self-sufficiency mindedness, and we didn't talk about what was that? Gosh, that's, oh, we didn't talk about dog coins, Doge coins, DogeCoins. We didn't talk about rationing cards, you know, about how awesome this is there. There. We didn't talk at all about the need for a guaranteed income, because we have the ability to do that in this country. And it's right here in this book called The Rise of Robots, which is, there is not going to be jobs for us. They're just way too awesome, these robots. And there's nothing stopping that. So we should just get a basic income and just, you know, live our lives and have a great time of it if we happen to be one of the lucky ones. And if we're not one of the lucky ones, we're going to be dead. That's fine.
Yeah, but you have to be defined what culture you live in, what's actually going to
happen. That's what I said. If you're not one of the lucky ones, then it's going to be a problem. That's right. And then we didn't talk about the utility of just kind of having glue and use it often when things break. You know, get some wood glue, have it around. We didn't talk about avocado oil stains on bare hardwood floorings and what to do about that. And we didn't talk about using Google Tasks, because, you know, Gmail, Google Tasks, and G Tasks as an app, which can be used, because we just talk about all these ideas. We didn't talk about how to put them into a task. And we didn't talk at all about the beauty of delayed gratification, because all these things that we're talking about, it's going to take a long time to even make any inroads, but you got to talk about them, and you got to believe, you got to have hope. We didn't talk about how important it is to have good, brave habit formations. We didn't talk about the beauty, the importance of having external energy, which is the heat around us, the internal energy, which is our food, and the energy from above, which is in our heads. That's what we need to basically do in order to survive, and we need to focus on it. We didn't talk about water, vinegar, butterfly gardens, or making mentors. Those are the things that we didn't talk about today. Does anybody else want to share something that we didn't talk about, because we really don't have any time?
You have agendas for the rest of the year.
Well, pretty much, I was getting through them, and then we just sort of...
Well, we went off on good topics.
Well, yeah, and we also didn't talk about the garbage primer book, and we didn't talk about waste, uncovering the global food scandal. So if Louisville wants to cut down the amount of food in its garbage, it needs to just start putting the food and giving it to either hogs or giving it to people, which they're starting to do. And we also didn't talk about localizing your light instead of having a whole house on, just light where you're at. I think there's nothing else that I can think of that we could possibly talk about. Anybody else?
There's plenty to talk about.
There is plenty to talk about. And if I had my guitar close, I would sing, you know, Let There Be Peace on Earth again, but it's not close. So we just have to leave it at that. So we have to just sing Kumbaya, and then we will definitely do a group hug. But first of all, I got to stop the recording because we don't want to do the group hug.